Well, hey, Stephen, I really appreciate this opportunity and you take the time to come and talk to us and share your story and us get to learn about you. And it'd be great if you could just introduce yourself to our audience and listeners.
Okay. Hey, guys, I'm Stephen Handley and I'm originally from the UK, Britain, but I moved to Norway 8 years ago and that's where I live now. I've been setting up a new life and living here. I'd served in the military previously, which I guess we'll touch on a little bit later. And now I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I got, I guess.
I hear that. Spoken like a true person, just trying to do the best we can. So I was scrolling through Instagram earlier, and you know, we were talking before we kind of started the show, and because we're both outdoor enthusiasts. And so kind of where I wanted to start the conversation was because we talked about your first experience in the outdoors, going in the mountains and doing alpine, things like that. And I'm, as a rock climber, I realized like after the first time I got this, like, just, it's like it sunk its teeth into me, the outdoor industry. And I'm kind of curious, what do you think is it about the like outdoor world, the sports, those adventures that like really speak to like your soul or to the soul of people that get involved in those activities?
I think there's a couple of paths to it for me. I think one of the paths to it is that when you're out there, you know, you're alone with the nature and you're away from the, I mean, I don't have a hectic life, but I'm away from the rat race and the status anxiety that's around everywhere and all the day-to-day stuff. You're away from that. And I think, a lot of the times you don't even have phone signal or anything, or your phone's going to be dead. You don't have a lot of battery. So I think it just keeps you out of all that. And I think that's good for anyone in it, whichever way you're doing it, whether that's fishing or what it might be. So I think that's one asset, one part of it. And then I'd say the other part is the physical aspect for me. I think especially a lot of the harder stuff, like the bigger mountains, I think getting to the end of those days and feeling like I've really used my body and I'm exhausted, and that when the first bit of food and drink goes down and then you feel like you've earned it. And I think it's again just back to basics, and I think that's something that I'd probably missed from military life that I didn't even realize it until I tasted it again. So yeah, I think that's what bit me.
Can you elaborate on what you mean back to kind of basics?
I think, because I like, say for example, when I was in Afghanistan and serving there was a niceness to it in the way that you only have certain things to think about, right? You have to do your job and you've got to protect you and the others. And that's pretty much it. You know, you've got these basic roles and these basic things that you need to do, and you don't have to worry about all the intricacies of normal life, I guess. And I think that's the same when you're out in the mountains. You don't have to worry about all the food shopping and the school runs and all the intricacies of life. Did I say hello to that person? Did I do this? Did I do that? You know, you're there. You've got a job to do. You've got an objective to focus on, and you need to kind of, not to make it sound so risky, but survive, feed yourself, water yourself, the basics. So I think breaking it back down to that, I think there's something refreshing about that. Even as an extreme scenario as Afghanistan, there was something refreshing about that. And I think there was a kind of peace there for a lot of guys.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the word peace, because I think that's really important to see, right? Because you talk about you're away from all the complexities of like the modern day life, and you get back to, like you said, the basics, and it's just so simple. It's eat, survive, accomplish the objective, and go home, things like that. Do you think it brings you it makes you more present for a lot of things as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because of the less the little distractions you have there, and only being super focused on what you need to do, you do have more time to just notice the things around you, and I think you probably, you know, you take things in a lot more. You're definitely a lot more present. I think I've had a lot of more emotional thoughts probably when I've been away in the mountains with myself than I've had any other time during my day-to-day weeks and months. I think a lot of sort of like epiphanies. That's a little bit extreme, but yeah, definitely had a lot more feelings coming out of me when I've been away and doing trips like that.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's like those modern complexities really hide that thought process, right? Because you get so distracted and overstimulated, but then you escape to nature and it's just something so pure about being out
there. Yeah, I think that's it. I think we're very distracted and we have tiny attention spans because of that now, I think. And it's always something else. I'm terrible. I'm sure a lot of people are terrible. You know, I'll be playing chess on my phone and I'll be on Instagram and then I'll be on this and then I'll be talking to someone and then I'll be doing something else. And then there's a series to watch and there's all these different things, you know, and then you're training and your kids and everything else. And you just go as bam, 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 and ticking off boxes constantly, making your way through the list and then adding things to the list. And it just goes like that. Maybe that's my poor time management too, but it's just less when you're out on these trips, you know. I think it's just a real nice, simple life, simple way to it.
Could you describe what it was like your first time, you know, post-military going out back into the mountains?
So, I mean, I guess there's phases. I mean, I was hiking for many years, like small hikes. So I would never say I really had a massive impact on me. That wasn't big enough. I think the first time I really had this bike we're talking about is when I did Mont Blanc in France, which is, I think it's the tallest in continental Europe, which means not Russia. It's the tallest in Europe. So that was in 2019. I think I trained for about 6 months. I can't remember how we ended up having an idea to do this. For me and a couple of other amputee guys decided to do it. And we trained for it. And I think that too, having these goals and having something to train for is always nice. And a big part of when you're out there getting the objective, and same as again with the military, you've trained for something and when you get to do it, it's a nice feeling. And I think that for me or the mountains too, I like training for it and then getting there and doing what I've trained to do. But yeah, that trip was awesome. You know, it was hard, really hard. And it was the hardest thing I think I've done physically, the hardest thing I've done since, you know, leaving the military and after my injury and everything else. I think it was, it was a real, real big achievement for me. And I was super proud and I was, you know, blown away by the beauty and the experience. You know, the views there are insane. If you ever get a chance to do it, or if you see any pictures of Mont Blanc, it's just an incredible mountain, and the ranges of the Alps are insane. So, you know, everything was perfect. You know, it was amazing. It was hard, really hard. It was great.
Hard but worth it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I've been doing it ever since, so I was keep putting myself through it. But no, it was hard, and we had some issues because it was the first thing I'd done with like that with prosthetics on, and my leg actually broke on the way down, so I like had to figure that out. And then the other amputee I climbed with, the Delta 2, they were above the amputee, so they were a lot slower, so they needed to use like these special short legs, which they were basically crawling up the mountain. It's insane and really impressive. So we were kind of on different paces. But then on the summit night, we wanted to summit together. So we tried to do that. But then I was standing around way too long, getting really cold. So I ended up having to push up. But by then I was super cold. I had to sit in this hut and try and warm up for a bit. And that's the great thing too, is you're always learning stuff. And that time I was sat in this hut, there's like a little emergency out just before the summit. And I just couldn't get warm again. And I had like blankets and stuff and trying to warm myself up. And I realized that I think it was my legs, because the metal had got cold and it was just keeping me cold. So I had to take my legs off. And then sure enough, I started warming up. And once that happened, I got to the summit, come back down, puked. I had altitude sickness. Again, I didn't do any acclimatization for it. Didn't do any acclimatization. I just went straight up. So again, lessons learned. But no, it was great. It was awesome. And I kind of got down and yeah, I think even right there and then, because it was so, I was so tired and I was in pain and I had a lot of sunburn on my face and all the amateur stuff, not looking after myself properly. I don't think I realized even, you know, what I'd done until I got home, really. I think I was just kind of buzzing off it and not being it. And then only really when I came home and took in a bit of what I'd done, I was really happy. And then pretty soon after, I was looking at the next memory.
I mean, like a true veteran, just jumping in both feet, hair, you know, head first, like, yeah, let's do that. Because you said you didn't acclimatize. I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right.
pretty typical dumb infantry.
Yeah. We love it though. I mean, because that's the greatest. I mean, but it's comparable to life, right? Because you just jump in and do it. It's the greatest way to learn. And you learn so many unforgettable things that way, or unforgettable lessons in that aspect.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wouldn't do it again. So I definitely learned something, but no, it was actually not as bad. I mean, I puked, but I don't know. Some of that might have been exhaustion too, because it was, it was hard, but it was great. And I wanted to keep on doing it now for as long as I can, as many years as I've got left in me. I think it's something for now. Anyway, you never know. Maybe I'll get sick of it, but for now, it's my true pop thing. So.
I doubt you'll get sick. I think you got the bug, so it's there forever.
You're doing more rock climbing, right? Or do you do?
Yeah, got into rock climbing when I got out, and so that kind of I say rock climbing saved my life, but like I just found a whole different community through that activity, and then just found a whole new perspective on life, and that really just set me on the trajectory in which where I'm at now, and so. I love it. And what I like about it is it's very internal. It's not external. Like going and, you know, if you're like trying to run and set a record or something like that, when it comes to climbing, it's very internal. You're very focused on what you're doing at that time. And then when you get into more advanced styles of climbing where you're, it's called multi-pitch, where instead of going up and then coming down, you go up. Go up kind of like what you guys do, and I'm like,
right.
There's nothing like just building an anchor and hanging on it on the side of this mountain and just being like, I really theoretically shouldn't be here because I don't have wings, but here I am just hanging on this piece of cord, just living life.
Yeah, it's epic. You know, they've done a lot of big technical rock climbing. I've done like a little bit, just usually I've done quite a bit doing like the warm up days of a lot of these mountains we've done. I've been like to mess around on rock climbing and doing stuff there, but backing, I'm definitely not a good climber.
It takes practice. I compare it to yoga and like golf because it's just so body awareness focused. And that's what I think is really cool about it. And that's why I think it just like brings you from like you said, the complexity of life, and it just gets narrowed into this simple focus.
Yeah. I think there's something beautiful about anything, like I said earlier, whether that's fishing for you or whatever it might be, rock climbing, I mean, anything that can do that to you, I think is great, and you should do more of it. But I think we don't.
Yeah.
People don't make enough time for stuff like that, I think, these days. I think it's a big issue. We're so busy being busy.
Yeah, or you get sucked into the doom scroll, you know?
Yeah, I think that and just everything, you know? It's so time goes by so quick as well, you know? It's so easy to just, as I said earlier, the distractions, it's so easy to use time fast. I mean, I do some long training sessions sometimes. It's funny because some people are like, how do you train for like 2 hours, 3 hours? Don't you get bored? Isn't that long? 3 hours is boring. 3 hours isn't boring, and you would easily spend 3 hours watching a TV series in an evening and you wouldn't have found it boring, right? So it's, I don't know, It's how you want to use your time, and it's trying to prioritize it and remind yourself of it. And it's easy to fall back into those things. And, you know, I do it myself. I got to recheck myself all the time, because it's, you have weeks where you're like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah, that's something I'm constantly doing, right? Because, like, I got to study and stuff like that, and then I have to get the podcast set up and other things. So I'm like, I can't sacrifice 10 minutes sometimes scrolling, which is nice, or I can do it, and then it's like 5 minutes till I'm like, oh, I got to jump on camera. And so you just get distracted. So it happens.
Oh, it is. And I think,
yeah, I think the
you've got to realize as well that the system's built against us in our way. It's built for them, right? It's supposed to be doing that. It's supposed to be giving us little dopamine hits and keeping us sucked in and spending time, which equals money for them. And yeah, it's all rigged that way, right? Everything is made like that. Computer games, TV series, your phone, you know, you get all the adverts, you know, catered to you. And you've got to realize that it's not for you, it's for them. But it's easier said than done.
Yeah, it is really hard. Like you said, it's that dopamine effect, right? But I mean, when it comes though to like the sport we're talking about, the outdoors, it's that feeling you get, and it just, you feel relaxed and rested. You don't feel amped up and like tense.
No, yeah.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah. So even though it's super hard, like a lot of stuff, I mean, I've had some moments where it's caused some adrenaline hits, you know, there's been some stuff, but slipping on ice and stuff like that is with a heavy sled is never fun. But I think for the most part, yeah, even when you're exhausted, you're still just, you get to the huts, the mountain huts and stuff, and you're looking around, and you're like you said, you shouldn't be here. And you're so, I think the other thing with the mountains as well is it's so vast and it's so big, and they've been there so long, and they're going to be there longer than, you know, they've been there longer than you, and they're going to be longer than you. They put you into perspective, you know, they make you realize you're just insignificant. And again, I think in a world where everybody is trying to be significant all the time, I think it's nice to be reminded that you're kind of nothing, you know, you're not going to be here forever. You're not, you know, even if you're the most famous, if I was the most famous person in this town in 100 years, nobody would know my name. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know who the most famous, who the coolest guy was in this town 100 years ago. I don't know. You know, nobody knows. So I think sometimes you need to have that put back into your mind.
Yeah, that constant reminder being put into perspective is very important, right? That you're not significant. And I think it's cool because, like, I've heard it said before, it's like, what, 3 generations removed from, like, if you have kids. So, like, your great-grandkids will be like, oh, yeah, great-granddad Steven, and that's it. So it's like, just live life and do what you enjoy, really, is kind of the essence of that.
Yeah, I think it's, and again, I think that's also part of the, I feel like we're always getting told what's important by other things that are built for us, you know? And I think that's happened for years. It's just more often now because of social media. But, you know, we've always been sold marketing and success. This is what success is. This is what this is, right? Money, fame, et cetera. Everybody knows. Yeah. We're just getting it from all angles these days, or more angles, I should say. But it's done really well. So you've got to really try and refocus.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue because, you know, through the conversation, you were talking how, like, you, when you first went into the Mount Blanc and French, did that climb, and you felt like you were back kind of in that military mindset. The things you did in the military, everything was simple. And I was actually watching Reel on your Instagram, and I think it was like a little video they did, or there was a documentary about that. And I'm kind of curious, like, how did you kind of find your purpose in the world after you left the military and then kind of got into the outdoor world?
If I'm honest, I think I'm still trying to find my purpose. I don't feel like I have found it. I still I mean, not like the purpose. I feel, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a partner. I have those purposes. And I appreciate, you know, I think they can be enough too, right? Why do they have to be, again, why do we have to try to be something special? And to be honest, I want to just be a good dad, a good partner. And I want to, of course, do these things that I love to do and keep doing that. And, you know, I'm not trying to be the best in the world at that either. I'm not trying to do any speed record or be the first person to do this or the first person to do that. I'm just trying to, you know, right now I'm doing the mountaineering and I want to be the best mountaineer that I can be. So I'm trying to learn. And whenever I have guides, I ask them questions and try and learn from them. And I feel like I have learned every time I've done trips. I've got better. I've learned more. Whether that's rope skills, just finding routes, etc. It's all there to be learned. But no, I'm not. I think I struggled for a bit with the whole purpose thing. You know, I've done different jobs and I've done different things, feeling like I need to do something. I need to do this. I need to have a purpose. And there's a part of me that's still like that, but it's less than it was before. But no, I definitely don't feel like I've found a purpose yet. Some people seem to have it so easy in terms of they found this thing and that's their purpose and they're set on it. And I think that's amazing. That's great. But that's not me. Not yet.
Yeah, but the way you talk about it, I think it's beautiful, because if you look at it, it's so very person and perspective dependent, right? Because like you're a dad, you're a partner, right? You're a mountaineer, you're a veteran, you're a part of this military community. And like you said, a lot of people, and I can tell you myself, I haven't found this like big so-called purpose, but like, I know I just want to be a good person and like, I want to meet interesting people and just like live a great life and be a good person. You know, I mean, why can't it just be that? You know, I don't, like you said, I don't have to go out and set these records and do this.
No, and I think, again, look, we touched on earlier with the social media and thing, and always getting things slapped in your face of like, this is a success and this is this, and everybody's trying to be the best at this, the best at that, have this many followers, have this many sponsors and stuff, and be the first man to do this, the fastest woman to do this. And it's just like great for them, I guess. And I think lots of them do it and aren't even happy about it, honestly. I think some people just need, they feel like it's the new success, right? It's like before it was, you know, fame and money, and if I get this famous, if I get this, and then that led on to people getting like, you know, reality TV famous and stuff, right? Because it didn't matter how they've got famous, they just needed to get famous, because once they got there, you know, everything was going to click into place, they were going to be happy. And I think for a lot of people that's that. And I think for the social media and the other things now is, once I get this, I'll be happy. Once I get this, I'll be happy. Once I get this, I'll be happy. And I think that can be a dangerous path as well. I mean, if being famous made you happy, then there wouldn't be so many famous people that have killed themselves, you know? But So I think you need to be able to define what success looks like to you before you can try and be successful. Like, and it needs to be your version of success, not the version that you've been told from your parents or from the media or from people around you. You know, this, that's cool. If you get this car, if you get this house, if you get this job, if you get this, it needs to be your version of success. Otherwise you'll never be successful. You know, even if you get those things, if they're other people's ideas, there's a good chance you're not going to feel successful even once you get them.
Yeah, it's like empty. It's like empty happiness, right? Like, I hit this supposedly societal approved plateau, right? Of wealth, money, fame, whatever it is. But like you said, a lot of those people end up committing suicide, you know? So it's like, is it truly happiness, or did they get there and they're like, oh shit, this was not anything I ever wanted, or was it what I thought it was going to be? And then you'd have that empty feeling.
I think it's with anything. And it goes to say, look, you can take that same kind of ideology when it comes to image and stuff, right? Like, if people think, oh, when I get a six pack, I'll be happy. Or when I get this, I'll be happy. When I look this way, I'll be happy. And then they have another surgery and another surgery and another surgery. It's because you get there and then nothing changes, right? Like, like as a youngster, the typical, I was into all that too. Like, what if I get a Porsche, if I get this? And I had a Porsche 2 years ago and nothing changed. I actually didn't even like driving it because I didn't want to take it places and get it scratched and whatever, and didn't even have fun in it, you know? So I'd much prefer a Subaru, a banged up Subaru that I had before, because I had loads of fun. Yeah, I had loads of fun trips in it, and I had my dog in it, and used to take it off road and do all sorts of it. And I think looking back, that was the car I had the most fun in. That was the car I was happiest in. So I don't know. I think there's been a few moments like that in my life where I've got these things that I think the older me would have been saying, oh, if you get this, you'll be happy. If you get this, you'll be successful. If you get this, and then I've got it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm the same. Nothing's changed. So I think you've got to be careful with stuff like that. And I think that goes probably the same with running, with climbing, with anything, right? I just need to do this. I just need to do this. I just need to do this. And then you end up dead. So I don't know. I think one step at a time for me, and I just want to be better. I just want to be better. And I think there's a big part of me that's always, I don't really want to be defined by one thing either, I guess. Like, I don't want to be, like, I feel like that's a big thing with amputees too. Like, there's quite a lot of people that make being an amputee like their whole thing. And some of it, I don't know if it's just for social media. And I think some of it is actually like, they do really take on that identity. Like, and then they make it almost like you're nothing else other than an amputee. And I'm like, why? You've got so much more to offer. You know, you're still like a person and a human being, or a dad and a partner and a son and whatever else it is you do. You don't have to make your whole life about that. I don't know. It's a deep subject.
It is, but I'm really glad you brought it up, because I had interviewed a guy yesterday that has cerebral palsy and is an adaptive skier for USA, for Team USA. And like, him and I were talking about it, and because he posts on social media, like, you know, look at your Instagram and stuff like that. And he was like, the reels that get the most views and like essentially go viral per se are when you really notice by adaptation.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is something that should be kind of highlighted and should be talked about. And I think it goes along with what you were saying.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think you could really like lean into it and milk it. Like, same as even like your name, you know, if I changed my name on Instagram to like Amputee Runner or something like that, instead of just Stephen Hanley, because that's who I am, you know, you're going to get more likely to be found by people looking at that content, which is fair enough. That's the game if you want to play it. But I don't know if people are playing the game and just doing it for the social media and they want to get things out of that, that's all power to them as well, right? But I hope people, if they are taking on that actually like personally, I hope they kind of see past it and are able to see themselves as more than just that, because that would be pretty sad actually. But no, I don't know.
Yeah, it's because I think showing who you are is more important. Like, it's that authentic, right? And you're more likely to connect. It takes time. And that's like you said, it's a game and it's a long game, unfortunately. But I really love how you balance both, like, all of your physical training, the mountain stuff, and like, yeah, okay, in some of your pictures you do see the prosthetics and stuff, but like, you see pictures of your family and other things, and like, that's the beauty, and that's what social media should be for.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, I've done posts about prosthetics and stuff too, because I get messages from other amputees and saying, oh, you know, how to do this or what to do with this, and so then, well, people are obviously interested, so then I've talked about how I fix my legs sometimes and stuff like that. But yeah, it can't be your whole thing. And it's like, I never want to be, I hate the idea of somebody being like, oh yeah, he's strong for an amputee, or he's fit for an amputee, or he's this for an amputee. I just want to be fit and I just want to be strong. And I don't, and the same with the mountaineering, I don't want to be like, yeah, he's okay considering, I want to be good at, come on, maybe I will only ever be as good, you know, good considering, but the point is, I don't want to be. I want to be as good as I can be, you know. I want to be actually good. So I don't know. It's, we'll see where we go.
Yeah, but the interesting thing that I kind of want to highlight is when you said, like, people reach out to you on Instagram, and I think that is a good segue into, like, talking about the community and especially the outdoor sports world. Like, I don't know about you, but I've never experienced anything like that other than the military. And I think it's just so incredible.
You mean, like, on Instagram or just in general?
The outdoor community, so like rock climbers, mountain bikers, alpinists, like, it's just like, in my opinion, it seems, trying to say, like, knowing how people reached out to you on Instagram, right, you can see that there's like a community, right, because you have other alpinists that are asking you questions, and I think
I think both in person, like when I've been, unfortunately I'm not close enough to a place where I get to like really soak that in week to week, month to month. It's only when I go on these trips and I meet up with the guides and the groups, all these different things, that I really get to get involved with that. And it does seem really tight, especially if you go to like France, Italy, Switzerland, where all the main groups are operating, the more guides and stuff. And it seems to be like a real, you know, everybody knows each other and everybody kind of knows what they're about and who's done what and everything else. So that seems really cool. It seems like a different kind of, they don't like their own different worlds, like you said, like the military is your own, in your own little country. It's always talk about like the military base being like, you were just in a different city of its own, like the rules outside almost being applied. You had your own little thing going on. But yeah, that, and then as the social media thing, yeah, I mean, I've got so many messages over the years. Probably get one, at the very least, one every week, month and a half or something, I'd say. And that's from anything to do with mountaineering, to do with just purely prosthetics too. So that's like people that are not even outdoorsy, but just wondering how I manage. Like running too, the running, because I've been doing that more. I've had quite a few people messaging about running, what I do with the what kind of legs I use, what I do with sweat, what I do with this, what I do with that. So there's always somebody wondering something, and I guess there's always going to be new amputees as well. So and I know for myself, when I was first an amputee, I was looking at people and seeing what was possible. So you're looking ahead and looking at other people and seeing, okay, they're doing this, they're doing that. So there's hope, you know. It gave you kind of like hope, and it gave you inspiration or aspirations to look up to be able to do it yourself one day. So I think it's important that's there. And it's been loads of times when I've thought about just stopping with the Instagram, because I'm not an influencer. I don't do all the things I know I could do if I really wanted to just get likes and follows, and I just can't be bothered, to be honest with you, doing all the editing and doing all the different things. Like, I'll have ideas for videos and stuff, and I'm like, oh, that would be quite a cool video. But then I'm like, oh, then I'd have to do this and set up a tripod and do this. And most of the time, my videos are just me leaning my phone against the water bowl or some fish. Not very technical. And so, the amount of times I'd be like, I'm just going to sack off the Instagram stuff. And the two things that tend to keep me on it is, one, I've got so much stuff on it now, and I've changed my phones, and like, that's pretty much my photo album now. And the other one is that it always seems to be around the time I'm thinking of it too, is that like I'll get a message from someone that's, you know, said, oh, you inspired me, or, you know, keep it up, and I'm new, and I have a conversation with them and talk, and then they, you know, they're appreciative, and I'm like, okay, then something's good come out of it. And then likewise for me, I get to see, there's loads of people that I see on Instagram that are doing things, climbers, mountaineers, both amputee and not, that I don't know on any other platform. I don't know, have them on my telephone numbers, and I don't have them on Facebook or anything else. So it's the only place I get to sort of see them and then do that too. So, and I take that. There's amputees that have done way more stuff than me. So it's great for me to see, I look up to them, you know, and I look, I look at them as well and take inspiration from them. So
it's it can be a good platform. I think it's like most things, you know, you've got to use it for
how you want to use it.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a great resource to have for someone that maybe is going through, or is, like you said, as a new amputee, or just anybody in general that needs something to maybe put some perspective on stuff or reach out if they need help. Like you said, it's just like a community. But then, you know, like you said, you're not in like a living community where there's like a big alpinist. But then when you get on the social media, you can connect with that like community that you're now a part of.
No, it's cool because there's loads of people doing so many cool things, and I get to see it through that. And it's really fascinating. And I've even met people like, both in person, when I only knew them from Instagram. Like when I was on my last trip in Alaska, there's an adventurer there, and we were kind of in contact a bit on Instagram, and then we were looked like we were going to be around the same time, so we ended up messaging, and we actually met up and didn't stay for too long, but you know, said hi, had a picture, and he went off and did his thing, and I went off and did mine, so that was cool. And I think you had one of the guys on here actually recently, and I had like a little FaceTime privately with him because he'd done Alaska before, so I wanted to kind of get some tips or any information that he could help. So we had a little private FaceTime with him actually, and there's been many stories like that too.
Yeah, I saw that there was a snapshot of you and Pete talking.
Yeah,
and I was like, I know that guy.
No. Yeah, so that was he's doing all sorts of stuff. He's a great guy too. He's really nice, and he was, you know, happy enough to take a phone call and was really helpful, and it was cool. And again, he's somebody that, you know, I look up to, and he's doing his own thing and doesn't seem to be too bothered about, you know, the social media and all these sort of things, and he's just living his life, and I think he's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, Pete's incredible, man. It was very interesting. Like I said, it was like just an honor. Like, it's an honor to talk to you. It was an honor to talk to him. You guys just hear all your amazing stories, you know, live vicariously through you for right now until I get done with school.
How long have you got left?
Just a little over a year, like 2 months. So I'm really lucky.
Yeah, it'll fly.
Oh yeah, I can't wait. It's gonna be a great time. So looking forward to it. And then, but you know, I love like the conversation we've been having, and then I think it's been really enlightening, especially for the listeners. But something that I really would love to talk about, because I haven't talked to anybody that's doing this, is, you know, I saw on your Instagram a post about you that you you've been collecting spare parts for prosthetics to send to Romp Global, because that company goes to like other countries to help like fix prosthetics or give prosthetics to people. And like the post was for Guantanamo, but I'm sure there's like countries in Africa that are getting some of the stuff they're using. So I'd love for you to really talk about that.
Yeah, cool. So, I mean, Romp obviously is the ones doing all the work, really. All I do is send parts. I've sent them a few boxes, and they do a really cool thing where they take like a QR code from the stuff you've given. And then once it gets provided to someone, you almost like, you know, who's got your letter. They send me like a picture. I had a picture of some guys that have been fitted with the stuff, and that's pretty cool to see that really get used. I think they're in, I don't know where they are now, in Guatemala, I think, or somewhere. I'm not sure if they're in Africa, but I think they're in Guatemala or somewhere. So they're doing that. They've got, as you said, they've got people in there in country helping, you know, fit and maintain and do all the prosthetic side of things. But it's just getting equipment to them. And I realized here in Norway that I'd asked what they do with all the parts, because it was something that happened. I was trialing something, and I tried it for like a week or something, and then it wasn't for me, so I took it back. And then I said, what happens to that? No. And they said, oh, they'll just
they'll get scrapped because of insurances. They're not allowed to put it onto anyone else, even though it was like hardly used. I was like, what? That's crazy. I was like, that's like with everything. And they were like, yeah. So they were sent, showed me, took me in the back, and I got a really good relationship with them. They sponsor me for stuff, and you know, I'm always out like in their workshop, and you know, always just like a phone call away from them and stuff. It's pretty cool. So they took me in the back and they showed me like all the boxes of the stuff that's going to get scrapped. And I'm just like, it was like feet that weren't even that badly, well, not badly used at all, like easily serviceable. And I was like, oh, this is just going to go. And they were like, yeah. So I was like, wow. So I asked them if I could take stuff, and they needed to clear some things, I think, make sure that, again, because of insurance, they wasn't going to get them in trouble. And it was fine. So yeah, long story short, I collect the stuff from them that they're going to be chucking out, and I box it up, and usually got to strip it down because some of the stuff is just junk. So strip it down and I put it all in boxes and send it to Rom. I have about 4 boxes in my garage taking up space, which I've had for a long time too. I haven't sent anything to Rom for quite a while now, and I've got all these boxes in my garage taking up space that my missus is not too pleased about. So she keeps on asking me when I'm going to be sending it, and yeah, I keep forgetting I need to do that. It was so get that out to them soon. But no, they're a great organization. So if you want to check out what they do, and I think they do climbs and stuff too, like sponsored climbs to raise money. And I think they take amputees from America that climb to raise money, and then I think they usually always take people they fitted with prosthetics from that local place too, I believe, up some mountain or a volcano or something. So they do this big climb every year, along with other things. They do stuff all year raising money, but that's the main big one. I think they do the big climb, which I believe they've just come back from. So if you go on their page, you'll see that.
Yeah, I think it was, I think Pete said they were in Mexico, somewhere down in there maybe. Or even further south in South America, maybe.
I think it's Mexico. I think it's someone else.
Oh,
I can't remember the name. Yeah, Cotopaxi. I think that's why they were climbing. Great, Cotopaxi. Yeah, it's like a big volcano. But I'm not too good with my American geography. So.
I don't think it was in America. I think it was
South America.
South America.
Yeah, well, America, South America is the same for me.
Same thing.
For me, it's the same.
Yeah. Same for you.
The Americas.
That's all right. That's like Great Britain's all of it, but you got Welsh.
Yeah.
Then you have, all that.
Say Welsh.
Before I embarrass myself.
Yeah, but you've got the most important ones, so that's okay.
There, okay. As long as we're good, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, no, usually you get the, Wales in England. It's like, no. But yeah, it's the same. But yeah, but kudos to knowing that at least, because there's not that many that know that, I don't think. I get it quite often.
That's all right. Well, you know, I did my research, so, you know, I just knew.
Yeah, of course you did. Good. True podcaster. How long have you been doing this gig?
Oh, fool. Started in May. Yeah.
You enjoying it? Is this your purpose?
Oh man. Part of it. It's definitely part of it.
Do you think a big part of what made you do it is, again, the whole everybody's doing it sort of thing, and why not you? And like, did you have an interest in these kind of things before?
No. Here's how it happened. Before I got accepted, because I'm in a grad program, and so before I got into my grad program, I had 3 months between leaving work to going to school, and I got on like the YouTube rabbit hole of make $10,000 a month this way, that way. And as I explored more and more of like the YouTube world and like started paying more attention to podcasts and other things, I was like, my goal, and so I'm going to physical therapy school, and as a physical therapist, I can only have such a minor impact on a patient that I'm working with, and like you can have kind of a significant impact, right? Like you get to see people impact their lives kind of person to person. But with a podcast and a platform like YouTube, you can take all of this information that I'm learning that society really needs to understand and hear and put it on this large platform to just expand your reach that you can make such a better impact on people. And like, hopefully, like, right, the hope is to improve their lives. And then kind of the caveat with that, as you grow, you know, like, as you get into it being somewhat of a business you can run on the side and you make a little bit of money, it's a way to offset costs that you can do pro bono work, which to me would be the ultimate thing to do, is to be able to do physical therapy services and work with adaptive populations, neurological populations. And then so when you have that person that comes to you and is like, I don't really have anything, but I really could use whatever you use a physical therapy server, so I could use this or use that. It's like, you can tell them, okay, come on, like, I got you. I'm not worried about the cost.
Yeah.
I don't, let's go. Because, you know, insurance is really shitty in America. So having something to kind of off, like I said, offset so that you can do pro bono work, to me is more beneficial. And so that's one of the reasons why this started. But then I see it as a platform to really educate and impact others on a very wide scale. So I mean, that's kind of a complex answer.
No, but it's a complex subject. So it's when it comes to rehabilitation or anything, I think there's so much that gets overlooked or not talked about a lot, I guess. I think it's a subject you can talk about for hours. Like so much of the mental side of it, which is the hardest side of it. You know, like the physical rehab is just physical rehab, but I think especially as like, I don't know, well, for anyone, but I felt like being like a military man and being always, I don't know, I guess, prided myself on being kind of like alpha and fit and strong and everything else. Having like a big physical injury like that take you down a peg was a real big hit to the pride, you know? And I think it's something that I really struggled with for the first, well, and there's moments now still, but definitely the first period, a couple of years when I was quite aggressive, you know, fighting quite a lot. I had like a bit of a chip on my shoulder. Again, I think looking back in hindsight, I think it was just feeling like I had something to prove, feeling like I had to prove I could still handle myself. I was still alpha. I was still tough. I was still a man. All this silly, childish stuff, but you know, it gets to you, man, all that stuff. And I think a little bit similar with, not exactly the same, like we talked about with the success and the, if I get this, I think there's a lot of people, and I was there too, is like, once I get the perfect fit, prosthetic, because you think, all your problems are going to be solved once you get this good prosthetic. And after so many years go by, you realize it isn't a good prosthetic. It isn't like this special leg that's going to come along, you know? And I get one of the questions I get a lot all the time when I do things is like, oh, what feet do you use? Oh, if I had that foot. And I was like, I've done these things with many different feet, you know? It's not the foot. It's, don't get me wrong, the technology is amazing and it allows us to do so much, but, you know, there's been amputees doing things for many years with many different feet. If you're waiting for like that foot and this thing to do the things that you want to do, then you know, you're probably waiting for the wrong reason, waiting for the wrong thing. So there's a lot that goes into all that. I think things don't get easier. You just kind of get better at dealing with it. Yeah. What was the quote? Was it like, things don't get lighter, your back just gets stronger. You know, you're able to carry things better. Like, I think there's things that I have now where at the beginning it was like really painful and really sore. And it's probably the same things I have now, which is I'm much better at dealing with them. I don't think I have less pain. Oh, I think it's like, it's just become more normal. It's just become your new default saying to be uncomfortable. It's like, and I'm not in the David Goggins uncomfortable, like actually physically uncomfortable. No, I think you just get used to stuff like that and you get better at dealing with it. And then it's acceptance. I think accepting it, that it's like, just it's shit, you know. There's so much on Instagram where you see like the highlights, right? You see like all the amputees doing the stuff, doing the cool things, myself included, you know. You only post like the cool things. I don't post myself like hating putting my legs on in the morning and all this other stuff, you know. It's but that's what the allies are there. It, you know, can make it look as cool as you want, but it's fucking shit. It sucks. And it sucks most of the time. But there's other things in life too, so.
That's true. But then what I love though is, like you said, it's something you learn to live. So it's like this, you become adaptable to the adaptation now. And then it's, you said it perfectly, was like the acceptance of the situation. And then I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that might give, it gives you a sense of control, which is something that we as humans love having, is control.
Yeah, absolutely. I think once you accept it and once you, it makes you, it forces you to deal with it, right? Because if you don't accept it and you're waiting for like, oh, it's just because of this, it's just because of this. Once I get this, it'll be fine. Once I get this, it'll be fine. You've got this hope, and that, as they say, hope kills, right? It's like, that's what's stringing you along, and that's what's making everything unfair. Everything's unfair because if you just had this, it would be fine. But I think once you give that up, and once you be like, okay, this is me now, right? This is the way shit is. Then it helps you move on in a way and be like, all right, well, yeah, you've drawn a line under it. You draw a line under it, you say, it's shit. This is shit. But there's things we can do. There's stuff we can do. There's things we can live for. We still have this. We still have that. You can start looking elsewhere, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where it's important to like find your community, right? Or even whether you, even if you don't find a community, find an activity. Because there's so many benefits of exercise that don't include physical stuff, you know? Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in your brain with being physically active.
You know,
which I think that's the key that everybody should realize is, like, physical activity isn't, like, the aesthetics to look good naked to get a six-pack. It's like, no, it's, like, really beneficial health-wise, especially when it comes to your mental health, too.
Yeah, I think training saved me in many ways. It saved me, for one, it helped my recovery so much because I was fit and strong before I grinded. That's the other thing. It's like all good getting fit and strong after, but it's going to make your recovery so much faster. But God forbid you have a car crash and, you know, you don't have to join the army. You can lose your legs in a car crash. And if I used to say this for the guys I used to train in my gym sessions, you know, if you could end up like me, and if you're overweight and unfit, your recovery is going to be so much harder. And there's a good chance you're just going to spiral downwards, because once you know, in a wheelchair and you're doing less activity, you're probably going to put on more weight and you're probably going to get less fit. And then you might even be in a point where you can't even have prosthetic legs because you can't walk on them, you know, either you're not strong enough, you're too heavy. So I think that, and then that's just the physical side. And then the mental side, but those days or those hours where I was in the gym after my injury, you know, those were the only hours I had really when I wasn't thinking about my injury. I wasn't thinking about my legs. It was like a perfect distraction. I was thinking about the exercises I was doing and the pain in the muscles I was doing things with. And it was like that little piece of peace for me every time I was in the gym. So mentally it was like a savior too. So there's everything about it. Everything about training is amazing.
Yeah, and it is life-saving, right? Like I said, finding rock climbing saved my life, and it's a physical activity. And I had the physical, you know, or already had the interest in strength training and running, but then finding a physical activity kind of changed it too.
So no, I think that's the best.
Yeah. Well, Steven, thank you so much for your talking to us tonight and sharing your evening with us. And I appreciate your candor and authentic tone throughout this conversation. I learned so much and really appreciate your insights. And I know our listeners definitely appreciate it.
That was a good chat. I appreciate it.